red light is on. That means it's go time. Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Hollywood Joe Tussing, and this is episode one of The Fighter's Take, brought to you by BetDSI. Yep, we're going podcast. So on today's show, we will have a call-in from UFC featherweight Calvin Kattar taking on Chris Fishgold, a newcomer to the UFC. That fight happening October 27th on UFC Fight Night, Ozdemir versus Smith. Before we get to the interview, BetDSI is giving away free money. That is right. You cannot beat it. BetDSI will give you up to $500 free money when you head over to their site, sign up for an account, and make your first deposit. So, we are going to get a call in from the major favorite, Calvin Kattar, in his fight at UFC Fight Night, Ozdemir versus Smith. Kattar taking on Chris Fishgold. Calvin Kattar coming off a loss to Renato Moicano, a very back-and-forth fight. Kattar looked very good in the first round, but took a lot of leg kicks in the second and third round that slowed down his movement, and Renato Moicano was able to come away with the decision win. Moicano is now ranked number four in the featherweight division, so that says a lot for Calvin Kattar, who almost put Moicano out in the first round of that fight. So we will talk to Calvin Kattar. We will talk to Tyson Chartier. He is the manager of Kattar, runs Top Game Management. He also manages Rob Font, Kyle Bochniak, Andre Sukumtat. He's got a nice stable of fighters coming out of the Northeast. So let's get into the interview. So right now we're going to take a call from Calvin Kattar, UFC featherweight, as well as his manager from Top Game Management, Tyson Chartier. How you guys doing, Calvin?
Hey, I'm doing good, Joe. Thanks. How you doing?
Not too bad, man. I am living the dream. How about yourself, Tyson?
Not bad, man. We're in the car. We're driving down to Rhode Island for his last sparring session.
Awesome. So Chris Fishgold is going to be making his UFC debut to take on Calvin. Is it Kattar, Kattar? How do you say your last name?
I say Kattar, but however you want to say it, it's fine.
Hey, I'll say it like you. So Calvin Kattar is going to welcome Chris Fishgold into the UFC. Calvin is, I think you're 18-3 now. His last fight was just a banger with Renato Moicano. Outstanding fighter. Tyson Chartier is, he runs, you run Top Game Management?
Yeah, Top Game Management out of New Hampshire. A lot of guys in the Northeast.
So you guys are representing Bochniak and Sukumtat, Rob Font, our man here, Calvin Kattar. You have any other UFC guys on the roster?
Yeah, Mike Rodriguez and Devin Powell as well.
Oh, awesome. I seen you guys just signed another two-division champion. What is it, that CES?
Mitch Raposo. We signed an amateur, actually. He's 19 years old. He just turned 20 yesterday. He's going to be turning pro. He's got two belts in different organizations, but it was well worth signing an amateur. He's probably one of the most talented amateurs I've ever seen that has an amateur. We bring him in for camp to work with Rob in this camp. Pretty well-rounded kid. Like, he's part of that next generation of guys that are coming up that like don't specialize in anything. They're just good everywhere. So we're really excited about him.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it's a new breed of fighter that's coming up. These kids have been watching this stuff since they were just toddlers, and now they know how to do everything. It makes me a little bit reticent to go back and try to fight again, because some of these kids are just savages, man. But Calvin, your last fight with Renato, man, that was a banger. Caught him with that overhand at the beginning of the fight, man. I thought you were going to put him away. Did you start to get frustrated with all the leg kicks that he was throwing?
I mean, it was a lot of things in that fight that I wish I had done a little bit better, but you know, I think I'll be standing across from the cage again sometime soon, and I'll have a chance to show you guys what we've been working on since.
Outstanding, man. Yeah, it was a great fight. Last fight, I think that was April 7th, and now you are signed to fight UFC Fight Night October 27th. Anthony Smith is taking on Volkan Ozdemir, and on the prelims, we're getting Calvin Kattar taking on Chris Fishgold, making his UFC debut. So where are you guys headed to right now? You're in the car. You're headed up to do his last sparring session. Where is that going to be at?
Yeah,
Triforce MMA in Rhode Island. I'm working with my one of my coaches, Greg Ribello. He's been in my corner for the Boston card, and it was a big, big help in getting that knockout finish. And, yeah, just going to go tighten up on the combos we got planned for this one and getting some work with some solid wrestlers out that way. Cody Norby, John Duma, two guys that helped me out a lot this camp, so I'll tell you to finish the camp strong.
Do you know much about your opponent? I know this is his UFC debut, so have you been able to find much tape on him? Fish Gold is 17-1-1. So, seems like he's got a little bit of experience under his belt.
Yeah. So, I mean, Tyson put together a solid game plan for everybody we, we're matched up against. I've seen a little bit myself, but really, I don't care who I'm fighting 9 out of 10 times. I'm working on becoming a better martial artist and fighter for myself. No matter if Chris Fish Gold, gets injured tomorrow, and I get to fight a new guy, this week. So I'm just working on becoming a better martial artist. Obviously, with Chris's strength in mind, but like I said, Tyson puts together the game plan, and we go out and execute.
Yeah, Tyson gave me a little glimpse into the game plan stuff that you guys do for all the fights, man. It's super in depth. It's basically like Moneyball for MMA. I was saying, I seen the breakdowns that he was doing, and man, you guys are super prepared. Where did you start? Did you wrestle in high school? Did you do Golden Gloves or anything like that? Or did you just find your way into MMA?
So I started high school wrestling and never made it to college wrestling, although that would have been nice to add to the resume. Right out of high school, I just started fighting. And I worked with a boxing coach straight out of high school as well. So I had some started really raw with a high school wrestling and a boxing coach and just being a little rugged and scrappy myself.
Man, I gotta say, you got a serious granite chin on you, man. You took a couple good shots in that Moicano fight and just kept throwing serious bombs at him. You're 18-3. You've never been KO'd or TKO'd. You've only lost by submission once, so basically your losses are just decisions, correct?
Yeah, they find one way or another to move around, run around, and... I plan on a good fight this time around. I think Chris Fish Gold, I think he's going to be aggressive. Hope he doesn't hug me too much come fight night, because I don't really think anybody wants to do that shit.
Nobody wants snuggle fights.
We're going to touch him up on his way inside, and I'm ready to welcome him to the UFC and put another stamp on my resume for hopefully sign a new 4-fight deal and be a mainstay of the UFC.
Nice. Very nice, man. So, with your training, you do the normal sparring, taking classes for Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu, but do you do any, like, abnormal training? We see Tony Ferguson doing all just kind of craziness, standing on Bosa balls while he's lifting and things like that. That's a little bit outside of the norm, but do you do any, like, hot yoga or anything like that that people don't really associate with a mixed martial artist?
In the past, I've done a lot of triathlon type training, running, biking, swimming, but that's kind of a norm in MMA. I do a lot of yoga as well. I'm a fan of it, more so for flexibility and injury prevention, and just to calm down your mind a little bit. Get your mind off the fight a little bit. That, along with a little bit of golf, I like to mix some of that in. That's not training, but that's just to get the mind off the fight, be active, and stay the hell out of the kitchen for about 18 holes.
That's the hardest part, man. When it's fight time, it's staying out of the kitchen, man, getting hungry. Getting hungry for something more than a fight when you're down around 140 pounds or 145 pounds. I know the feeling.
For sure.
So what is it like for you in the locker room before a fight? We've heard Donald Cerrone say that he's, like, terrified. For me personally, I'm sort of the same way. Like, I'm putting up this front of I'm a badass, but inside my heart or my gut is screaming, just turn and run and get out, because you're about to go get locked in a cage with somebody. How do you feel when you're going into it? Do you have nerves, or is that something that doesn't really play a part into your game? I know everybody's really different with that.
No, for sure, you get them, but for me, it's all bullshit. It doesn't matter if you step foot in the cage, so really it's irrelevant to how you feel when when it's time to perform. So, yeah, of course you're going to have all this, these butterflies, the bullshit, but like I said, it's all bullshit. Once you step in the cage, that's what matters, how you feel. And as soon as the bell rings you know, it's pretty much too late to give a shit how you feel. You go in there and you know, it's that you were him at that point. And, you know, you find out that you just kind of respond. And at that point, man, hey, you just go. You go, green light. So as far as the locker room feel, yeah, it doesn't matter if you feel good, bad. I've had my worst sparring sessions before my best performances. I had my best sparring sessions before some of my bad performances. You know, it's like, it's all bullshit, so you step in the cage and it's time to go. So that's what I'm looking forward to, that feeling. And I believe in my training and my preparation that we're going to go out and get the job done.
You know, I love your fighting style. I love guys that go straight forward, that take shots and don't turn their back or kind of skip away like Alexander Gustafsson does or Condit does. I like guys that are going to stand in there. We both know what we came and got locked in this cage for, you know what I mean? So I really love the way that you try to walk people down. You've got a super powerful overhand. And I'm really excited to see what new wrinkles that you've put into your game since the Moicano fight, because have you been training any more kicking, Muay Thai, things like that? On the broadcast, Rogan was talking about checking kicks, but I don't check kicks because that hurts your shins. And it would, to me, it seems like it would do more damage to my shins to check a kick than to try to lift my leg and take it, sort of the way that Diaz does or that you did a few times in the fight. Do you train much of that stuff? Do you roll your shins out or anything like that?
I mean, I try to, it's like, yeah, you try to stay away from getting kicked with it, first and foremost. If you check, you're still getting hit with it. I think Marciano was big into hitting the forearms, right? Yeah, you're blocking the punch, but you're eating it in your forearms, and all of a sudden your hands are dropping down by your waist later in the round.
Exactly.
So I think always being elusive is huge. But like you said, to add to your point, if you're not progressing each fight, then you're falling behind. So, you know, we've made adjustments, we've made changes, and every time I go out, I try to reinvent and add some new tools to my game. And, you know, I've enjoyed this camp. I feel like I've made some strong gains with the style, like Chris Fishgold coming into play. And each and every time I go out, I feel like I'm just more of a complete martial artist. And I'm excited to go and test my skills. And everyone gets to go out and enjoy, you know, watching that. But for me, this fight is just me going out, testing my skills against another martial artist who deserves his shot. And you guys get to witness it.
Dude, I'm super excited. I love watching your guys' team fight. So I'll move it over to Tyson a little bit. So who else do you have on this card, Tyson? Is it just Calvin? Or Sukum Tots on it as well, right?
Yeah, the Asian sensation. He's got a little longer. It looks like Gavin Tucker. Gavin Tucker is moving down to 35. We were going to welcome him there. That was going to be a really exciting fight. You know, he's a tough fighter, pretty dynamic. So, you know, we had a good idea of how to fight him. And then, actually, 2 weeks ago today, we got the call that I guess he got hurt or something. So we have another debuter coming in, Sanchez, right? Well, to add to his point, like we said, it's really not who you're fighting. You've tried to become a better martial artist every time. Andre Sukum Tots, his opponent pulled out. Devin Powell's opponent pulled out yesterday.
Wow.
It's important to not be so dependent on who the hell you're fighting, because in this sport, it happens. You know, it happens fast. It happens all the time. Yeah, so we're excited about the new opponent that, you know, we had a couple opportunities, you know, a couple names to choose from. The guy we're fighting is a 5'7" southpaw, which is the same thing Gavin Tucker was. And Andre's been working on a lot of southpaw offense and defense, so it really played into it. So it really didn't change much. You know, Andre's 1-3 in the UFC, but if you go back and watch his fight, he could easily be 4-0. You know?
Yeah, everything was super close.
Yeah, in the Sean O'Malley fight, he just stands up in that third round. You know, he made a mental error, and he knows it. Taking him down to the third round when he broke his foot or hurt his foot. If he would have just stood up, you know, he wouldn't fight O'Malley, you know, going out on stretcher. So,
yeah, you know what? That was an amazing sequence of events there, and it was pretty cool that he didn't stand up. I mean, I know it was an easy way to get a win because a guy's hurt, but I love the fact that he went in and he tried to finish it. He didn't want to take that technical win sort of deal, and that's one of the things I love about your guys' team is you guys go out there like savages. Same thing with Rob Font, like Sukum Tot, Bochniak, his last fight. It's crazy how similar the guys in your team are. Were they that way before they signed with you as Top Game Management, or have you guys known each other before and it was just like the similar fighting style sort of brought you guys together?
No, it's like they all got, you know, everybody's got their own set of coaches. You know, the kind of the, I guess you could say the glue that keeps it all together, the connection, like, is, you know, the fact that they're all managed by me. But, you know, Kyle's got his own coaches. Andre's got his own coaches. You know, Calvin and Rob, I'm fortunate to be one of their coaches. But they get their own coaching staff, too. So, but they all cross-train. So they all get that same mentality, and they all get to bump shoulders with other people who have the same job and profession that they do at the highest level. So I think that does rub off on him a little bit. But, you know, Kyle, you know, you're fighting the beat. How are you going to beat that kid? And they were just like, let's just take the fight to him. And that fight still burns me because you look at the beat and everybody's talking about how he's, you know, the next world champion and, you know, it's just a matter of time. And I do think he's an amazing fighter, but I think what people lost on that is just how truly good Kyle is. You know, like he might have been, you know, people were like, oh, we got outclassed in a couple areas or whatever. But Kyle brought the fight to him, and, you know, he won that third round. And, you know, obviously you could say if it was five rounds, maybe he wins. But it wasn't a five round. So, yeah, he lost the fight, but no one else has done to Zabi what he was able to do to him. So I think, you know, I'm excited about his next fight, which is December 8th in Toronto. He's fighting a really good kickboxer team, Dawadu.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm excited to see Kyle get right back in there and, like, show the world that, like, you know, that wasn't just the Zabi fight. That was the Kyle Bosniak and Zabi fight. So I'm excited for him, too, man. Like, we got a lot of guys on our team who are finishers. And I think it just comes from, like, kind of the New England mindset is we're not going out there. We're not getting paid by the minute, you know. So we need to go out there and get wins, get out, get big, and try to get back in there as fast as we can. And I think, you know, one of my goals with Top State Management years ago was to try to really bring Northeast MMA up overall. Whether I manage you or not, I want all the prospects to make it to the UFC. And then, what's that saying? A rising tide raises all ships. So that's what we're trying to do here is, you know, we never trained with Kyle before, but then when he's in the UFC, you know, now he's starting to train with Robin Calvin, which is amazing. Andre moved down to Florida for a while. Now he's coming back to the camp here. Now we've made it an atmosphere, you know, training with guys like Joe Lozano and using his coaches in his camp and his facility. And you know, obviously Kyle's coach at Broadway and Calvin's his coach at, you know, Jacob Femme Fight Sports. And we get a bunch of other gyms that help out and ship in and let their guys come in and cross-train that. Now you're seeing, you know, this shift of guys who are looking at New England as a viable place to get a fight camp done. It's not, you don't have to move down to Florida and live in the dorms. Like, you can stay here and get it done now. And that's really what we're trying to do is create an atmosphere where these guys don't have to move, you know?
Don't have to come out here to Vegas. And that's what one thing I was going to ask you is, I'm here in Las Vegas. My whole career has been being able to jump around and train at Syndicate or at Drysdale and things. And so I wondered, like, with it being in the Northeast and there's different places, like you have Sidyo Tong or you have Rufus Sport over there, I'm sure that's only a few hours away, but what is the scene like for the Northeast? Is it, everything is super tight here. All the gyms know each other. Everybody trains with each other. And I guess that's what you're saying. Is that starting to happen now? The people are starting to, it's starting to cover more ground over the Northeast, because it does seem like there are more and more people coming out of the Boston, the New England area than as like high level guys. Like, I mean, just from your team, you've got what, four or five guys in the top 15, top 20 of the featherweight and lightweight division. So it seems like something's happening in the Northeast with these camps where, what do you envision, like, the major promotion out there being? Is it CES? Is that the biggest promotion you guys have on the Northeast?
No, Combat Zone. So Calvin owns Combat Zone. They have shows out of the answer. So we're on the phone with Calvin. We have to think Combat Zone is the longest running MMA promotion.
Nice.
The owner of that. He puts on five or six shows a year in New Hampshire. He runs a great show. He got a new venue about a year ago, and every show just keeps getting better and better. And you know, we're fortunate enough to team up. You know, obviously I'm Calvin's coach and manager, but I manage a lot of other guys that I put on his card. And, you know, I try to ask those favorable matchups. We don't always get them. You know, he puts his promoter hat on and we put together fair fights. But, there's a lot of promotions. There's people, you know, CS has obviously done a great job positioning themselves with the Access TV deal. So they get that national recognition. But, you know, you're seeing guys like Manny Bermudez came out of cage size with Michael Pulvier, did a really good job building him. You know, got him to what, like 13-0? Most of all the fights except for maybe one or two were with cage size. Joe Giannetti got to 8-0, got an Ultimate Fighter. Unfortunately, he just got his release. But same thing, he bought all his fights with cage size, they got UFC. And then, so you're starting to see other promotions in the Northeast become a viable option, which is great because, you know, these guys just need a bunch of fights, you know? So we want all the promotions in New England to be looked at as, hey, listen, like, I can fight all my fights for Combat Zone and go to the UFC. I can fight all my fights for cage fights. I can fight all my fights for CS. At the end of the day, like, we don't want all these guys bickering with each other. We all want to work together and accomplish what these guys' goals are, which is, you know, to get to the next level and, you know, just really raise the level of New England. And I think going back to what you said earlier, I think we've been very fortunate over the last probably 12, 14 months that we have a lot of really, really talented fighters that are finally getting their shot. But then we also have a really big group of talented coaches that have been able to put the differences aside if they did have any and coach without an ego and let their fighters go to these different gyms for sparring days. You know, we go down to Triforce on Wednesday night, and you're going to see pretty much everybody you've ever seen fight on CES on TV is there tonight. Saturday morning, Lausanne is a really big spot. You know, you got everybody, pretty much the same group that goes to Triforce on Wednesday night is at Joe Lausanne's on Saturday. So, like, I can bring Calvin and Rob and Andre and all those guys there, and we have almost every body type that's also skilled. So we can get good rounds and prepare for UFC camp without having to go down to Florida or go down to a Jackson's or California or Vegas. And I think that's really what we're building, but it wouldn't be possible if we didn't have so many like selfless coaches around willing to allow it to happen. You know, and that was kind of my vision probably 8 years ago with Top Game was it'd be nice if we could have these fighters from the smaller gyms get to the UFC, cross-train with all the other best fighters in New England, get to the UFC, but still represent their original coaches. And I think that's one thing we've done pretty good. Like, Kyle Bochniak is, you know, he's going to be a sixth fight in the UFC, and he's still with he's the only fighter out of his gym. He got one or two other fighters in his gym.
Wow.
And his original coach, John Clark, is there with him the whole way. So John Clark does all his training, and then he comes in and gets some sparring rounds in with these guys when he is necessary, but you know, that's the whole goal here is get as many fighters from New England to the UFC as we can, whether I manage them or not, and but have them help each other regardless, and then still go there and not have to fire your original coach who invested all that time in when you were an amateur and not getting paid. Allow those coaches to still go and represent you on that national stage, because I think everybody wins if you can do that.
That's it. See, and that's a big deal right there. I've seen in other interviews people talking about the loyalty in MMA and the loyalty in jiu-jitsu, how it's somewhat different than other sports like football or boxing and things like that. And so I love to hear someone like you say, like a manager that's involved with a lot of these high-level guys, saying it's time to like put the ego away for our area and really build up the community of martial arts so we all win. Because that's the way it is. I mean, if you look at what's coming out of the Northeast now, it's not just talking about Longo's gym. It's not just talking about Sarah and Weidman anymore. I mean, the amount of fighters that you guys have, that Top Game has been able to get into the UFC over the last 2 years is, I mean, that's pretty impressive for a guy that was just, you were just fighting not too long ago yourself, correct?
Yeah, I forgot my last fight. Oh, geez. We're now looking at 6 years ago. So my last fight, I actually fought on the same card as Calvin at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. That was one of the Chiefs that fought for CES and it was a pay-per-view. He's lucky it wasn't fighting me. I would have gave him that work. But no, I mean,
I've seen Tyson fight in person, man. He's a bad, bad dude.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Back when he was 7'6", back, he's looking like the old days now. He's shredded up. He lost how much weight? He lose? Almost 40 pounds?
Yeah, so that right there, Tyson, I saw a picture of you. I saw a picture of you, I think, 2 days ago, and it is, man. It's a huge difference in what you looked like just 3 months ago. What have you been doing? How have you done this? Or has it just been like, I'm going to jump myself back into the camps with my guys, and it happens?
Well, the desire to jump back into the camps is always there. I still got neck surgery you know, 6 years ago, and I still got a bad neck, so I got to be careful. But the desire to be there and be able to drill with these guys has always been there. But, you know, I mean, no excuses, but the excuse I gave myself was, you know, got married, had two surgeries, didn't have a reason to diet anymore. And then, you know, me and my wife had two kids, and, you know, we had a miscarriage in the middle. So we were pregnant for a while and then raised these little babies. And life just gets in the way, and I dive into these camps 100%. Like, there's some, you know, based on what we're doing in certain camps, there's sometimes where I'm doing 700 or 800 miles a week driving, and, you know, you just end up eating crappy food, you make bad decisions. But at the end of the day, like, that's on me. And then back in the end of May, me and my wife were like, you know, the baby was 6 months old. She's like, all right, I'm ready to, like, get back to it. And so she started, you know, doing a little bit of a keto diet. I followed suit. You know, I took her lead. And then she really just coached me, like, man, you need this, you need that. She started cooking a lot more.
Teamwork makes the dream work. That's awesome. So,
yeah.
What happened with your neck? I heard you say you had a neck issue. Is that what kept you from moving into the pro ranks? Did you ever fight as a pro?
Yeah, I sucked as a pro. So I started off 7-0 as an amateur, then I lost that fight that you saw out in Vegas, and then I went pro. I have gone 4-3 pro, but I was dealing with the same thing, like four herniated discs in my neck.
Ooh.
So for my whole pro career, I couldn't do any jiu-jitsu. I was just doing this for Big John, sparring, and then doing strength and conditioning. But I wasn't actually able to really do jiu-jitsu because it would hurt my neck too much. And I would just, like, hobble into fights and then try to grapple. And finally, after my last fight, I broke my thumb in my last fight. And then as that was healing, my neck really started to flare up. So I had to get neck surgery. I got the same surgery that Charles Rosa just got a few months ago.
Wow.
Which was two of the vertebrae fused. Two of the discs removed, three of the vertebrae fused. And then 4 months after that, I got thumb surgery, so it was time to hang it up. And I always had, like, a passion for the coaching anyway. Even when I was fighting, I was, you know, running a lot of the fight team practices and cornering all the guys and, you know, managing them at the same time. So, you know, I never had any delusions of going anywhere with MMA. It was just to keep me in shape, and I really loved it, and I loved challenging myself. And, you know, honestly, the brotherhood, like, I was a wrestler. And I missed that after college. I missed I missed the team camaraderie. And, like, you have that with these guys. Like, you know, these guys, when they lose, I lose. You know, when they win, I win. So I'm in it with them. And, you know, it's cool to still be part of it. You know, my body was never good enough to get where they're at. But my mind is great. And I know I can help in other ways. So that's really what I've been focusing on is, all right, how can we make sure all these guys realize their dreams? You know, if it's go to the UFC, how can we get them there? The good story I would use as an example is back in 2012 when Rob Font was on the up and he was fighting at 45. Calvin was always the number one 45er in the Northeast, and everybody was pushing for that fight to happen. They were number one, two, and I put my foot down. I was like, no, we're not going to have that fight. And everybody's like, you're crazy. You know, they need to fight. The fans deserve it. I go, listen, the fans don't deserve anything. I go, Calvin deserves to go to the UFC, and so does Rob. I'm like, yeah, but you don't manage Calvin. I'm like, it doesn't matter. I go, if Rob goes to the UFC and Calvin goes to the UFC, whether I manage Calvin or not, I go, it's going to make it easier for Rob's teammates to get to the UFC or some of the other guys I manage or some of Calvin's teammates. Like, so the idea even back then was, you know, I was already putting that into place with, let's get both these guys to the UFC. There's no reason our prospects should be killing each other locally.
Yes, exactly. Oh, man, I love to hear that it's – it wasn't about a thing like, oh, I want to be the baddest in Boston or anything like that. It's like we need to be lifting each other up. If we're the two best people in the Northeast, we should be representing the Northeast in the UFC, not trying to scrap it out for New England, you know? I love that.
Yeah, it's good, man, and I think you're starting to see it. Like, I'm not taking credit for all this. We just have some amazing coaches in New England, and we have some great fighters. But I think I'm just trying to do my part to keep those great fighters from New England away from each other. If you're going to fight, you know, do it for UFC money on Fox or ESPN now.
Like, yes.
Don't fight locally. And if you have to fight a prospect, which is nothing wrong with that, have a fly win it. Keep someone else's prospect and ruin their territory, you know?
Yeah.
We should be making the Northeast loud and proud because all it's going to do is make it easier to get the next generation of guys in because, you know, I remember someone saying, the Northeast kind of sucks on the national level, and they were right. You know, we had Doomsday, and we had Joe Lozon, and then, you know, Joe Parker was there for a little bit. But we were very underrepresented on the national level. And then you had all these other regions, like, no, if you want to go to the U.S., you have to go down to Florida or New Mexico or Vegas or California, and, you know, and there's these little pockets. And I'm like, listen, like, I've traveled around and I've trained all these different places. Our guys are just as good. But you just have a bunch of promoters trying to, you know, have the number one versus number two or this guy versus that guy. And it was a lot of, you know, egos with owners of gyms trying to beat the other best fighter in that gym and all these stupid things. And so little by little, I think just little examples of Rob and Calvin, like little things like that, we just kept chipping away at it. And not everybody's on board yet. But for the most part, I'd say we're 80% of doing that is on board with, like, all right, let's have some synergy here and build up. And you even heard, like, you know, there's a couple, one of my fighters, I think like 5 years, no, maybe 8 years ago, did an interview with Frank Trigg. And he was going for all these 10-3 as an amateur. And Frank Trigg, he just said it. He goes, you're 10-3 as an amateur in New England. He goes, and that's a really hard place to build up a career. He goes, it's not like California where you can go 10-0 and not fight anybody.
Yeah, so go to Gladiator Challenge.
Yeah, so I think we've done a pretty good job of trying to get everybody on the same page. And I think you're starting to see it at that national level. And, like, I'm excited about in another 5 years where the Northeast is going to be.
Yeah, I love that. And with all these other promotions sort of picking up the slack since the UFC seems to be asleep at the wheel, just putting on random fights. We see Bellator starting to really make some moves. And ONE FC just signed Eddie Alvarez. So it looks like some of these promotions are going to start taking a bit of that market share. And that gives even more places for the Northeast guys to go and be on the main stage. Because that's one of the problems we have here in Vegas. Is there, since this is the home of the UFC, we don't have a lot of or many other pro promotions here. Very rarely do we get pro promotions that put on anything in Las Vegas. So a lot of our top prospects are fighting each other and taking losses to guys that should be in the UFC. You know what I mean? And so that's one of the reasons I didn't fight much here. And I've never fought in Las Vegas other than as an amateur. And I went to Arizona to fight as a pro because I didn't want to be fighting another one of the top prospects, possibly take a loss or give a loss to somebody that can make it to the UFC, you know? And I really like the way you guys are thinking about that. It's like more forward thinking for the sport and for everybody's career instead of just being like, this is the guy we're going to invest in, this one person.
Yeah, and I don't want to get, like, misconstrued with my guys don't take tough fights because we took a lot of, you know, we take a lot of tough fights, but you just have to take smart fights. And we have to take fights that, you know, make sense for our guys, make sense for promotion, but then, if possible, make sense for the Northeast, you know?
Yes. Yeah, it's like a hierarchy of what's most important when you're signing for the fight. Because you don't want to fight a tomato can and really get nothing out of the fight except the W. You want to improve. You want to test some of the things that you've worked on. So you've got to have a real test there in front of you. But like you were saying, having Calvin and Rob fight each other before they make it to the UFC or something, that just, to me, that doesn't make much sense. And it's nice to see other people that are looking at the sport that way.
Yeah, well, you fast forward 6 years later, and now he's my number one training partner.
Dude, that's so cool. So
it works out well. So I feel like together, you know, we're able to achieve that much more.
And so when you were younger, did you watch a lot of UFC? When did you first, Calvin, find out about, like, mixed martial arts? Because I saw that you were you started as the matchmaker for that promotion you own now, Combat Zone?
No. I was just a fighter for that organization. I fought the Combat Zone 9 times before taking over ownership. And then I took a 3-year layoff around that time just, you know, to go balls to the wall with the promoting side and still stay involved, finding a way to monetize the sport that I like to be a part of. It's just I was sick of being a broke fighter, you know. And I mean, promoting wasn't too much of it. It was more of a duct tape thing. But, you know, it worked out. And I, like I said, how I got involved with MMA. I guess growing up, there was a lot of red flags that I'd see a fighter. You know, it didn't click till after high school. I always just felt like people I lost to in wrestling, if I could just punch him in the face, I would have beat his ass or something, you know? But that wasn't part of the rule set in wrestling. And they were just, like, technically better. They could run legs on me, or they had shot better technique. Because I started freshman year in wrestling. I didn't have the, you know, starting in, like, third, fourth grade like some of these other wrestlers, so... Technically, yeah, they knew a bit more wrestling moves, but me, I always felt like I had a lot of fight in me, a lot of scrap, and I found the sport that I'm able to express myself the best in, and you know, put my hands on some people in the process of you know, either whether it's taking them down, and really wrestling served as a good base, as you know, if you're more of a stand-up guy, to keep the fight on the feet, and if you know, if you want to take them down, you can take them down and win rounds. So it really, I just kind of got more involved around that time. I saw my sister's best friend Dave George take a fight, and ever since, I just got out of high school wrestling, like Tyson said, I missed the feeling of competing and that camaraderie and stuff, and camaraderie, and I saw his fight, and I started training with him that Monday, and then from there, I took my first fight 6 months later, and I just started piling him on from there. I just was hooked, and then here I am now, 30 years old, still cutting weight. I thought I'd be done after high school wrestling, but more than half of my life cutting weight and testing myself against, you know, some of the best competitors in the world now at this point.
Have you, any of the guys that you competed against as a high school wrestler, have any of them made it to UFC or Bellator? I wrestled Ryan Bader for the Nevada State Championship, and now he's one of the most famous MMA fighters on the planet. Is there anybody in your, or are you that guy that everybody else is looking at? Like, I wrestled him one time.
I think I'm seeing a little bit of that with some of the guys that have wrestled me in the past, but one guy that always stood out was Jimmy Quinlan. He was a senior captain of mine when I believe I was a sophomore, and, you know, he always just solid. He always improved over the years, got involved with jiu-jitsu, made it on the Ultimate Fighter, and it was great to, you know, watch his career grow and just realize, you know, that it's a possibility for everybody, even from our area, before it kind of happened. Like Tyson said, that vision, we all had that kind of vision to get there, but now it's becoming more and more real for this next generation of guys. They're just seeing it on a whole nother level, and it's exciting for everybody.
That's sort of how it worked out for me as well. Like, I wrestled in high school. I wanted to wrestle in college, but things didn't work out. And MMA was that way for me to get the competition, that feeling inside, you know, the chance to win again. You know, I love that feeling, and it's nice to talk to people that feel the same. And it's cool how over there on the East Coast, you guys have started to gravitate towards each other and really start to build something, sort of like they have in Florida or like we have here in Vegas, a real community around the MMA game where you're lifting each other up.
Yeah, in practice, it's really just that much more enjoyable being able to, you know, network with this group of guys that have the same interests, and we feed off each other, man, especially guys like Lazan that Tyson had mentioned. You know, he's a veteran, man. There's a lot he can tell you about the fight game, and we're able to ask those questions and be a part of it now that we're all under one wing. It's a great time to be a mixed martial artist in New England.
So, after this fight, after you finish Chris Fish Gold, do you have any future plans? Do you have like a 5-step plan or a 3-year plan in the UFC? You said you just signed another 4-fight contract. Is that what you said?
No, that's the plan. The plan is to go out and finish this kid and show the UFC that they need to sign me again. And I never look past any opponent ever, especially in this sport. You can only go on a per fight basis. But in my immediate plan, that's it. Go out, finish this kid, put on a dominant performance, and show why the UFC needs to sign me again.
Hey, man, if I was UFC brass, I'd have already sent you a contract, man. You're super exciting to watch. Everybody from your team is exciting to watch. I love how you guys plot forward and try to put hands on people. And I wish we got more of that from some of the other groups or teams in the UFC, because some of them don't have that killer instinct. Watching Kyle Bochniak's face when he was walking down Zabit, dude, I love that.
That's classic.
Yeah, man.
Anybody that knows Kyle knows that is Kyle Bochniak at his finest, man. And there's a reason why they call him Crash.
Yo, and that's what I love. It's like all of you guys, when we get a fighter, when we get a UFC fight with one of you guys, that's what we're going to get. We're going to get you guys going in there to put hands on people. And I was, you know what, I was super impressed with that third round of the Bochniak fight. For anybody that hasn't seen Kyle Bochniak versus Zabit Magomedsharipov, you guys should go back and watch that fight. Zabit is a super dynamic striker, and Kyle Bochniak took everything he had and was still trying to decapitate Zabit till the end of the 15 minutes. It was a bonkers fight. The last exchange they had against the cage was just nuts. And I'm really excited to see Kyle back in the octagon again, as well as Rob, Sukumtat, Calvin. You guys are super exciting. And that's what we're all, as fans, looking for, as fighters like you guys. So I really appreciate the effort that you guys put in, driving 2 hours to go get a sparring session in so you can go out and put on the most dynamic performance that you can for all of the fans. I love that, man. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the wording on that because that's what it is. So thank you.
Tyson, man, thank you so much for setting this up, giving me a chance to talk to Calvin. Since he entered the UFC, I've been watching his fights. I saw his first fight and was immediately drawn to his fighting style just because of the way that he tries to put that overhand on people. I love that, that he's not sitting back and waiting. Calvin, good luck in your sparring session today. Don't decapitate anybody before they lock you inside that cage on the 27th. Tyson, man, thank you so much for doing this. I'm excited to get some more conversations in with you, with Calvin, with Rob. So, yeah, you guys have a great day. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, appreciate it. Thank you.
So that will do it for episode 1 of the Fighter's Take, brought to you by BetDSI. I hope you guys enjoyed that look into the camp and preparation for Calvin Kattar's upcoming fight, October 27th, UFC Fight Night, Smith versus Ozdemir. Don't forget, if you head over to BetDSI, sign up for an account. They will give you some free money when you make your first deposit, maybe toss down a little action on Calvin Kattar, who is a huge favorite in this fight, a minus 330, going up against Chris Fishgold, the newcomer to the UFC. I really appreciate Calvin and his manager, Tyson, calling in, taking the time out to give us a glimpse into what it takes to be a UFC fighter. And I really appreciate you all for tuning in and spending a little time with me. Until next time, thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.